Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this, my Four Center friends, is Four Center Main Show. I'm Ken Napsack.
And I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, enjoying Ken's exciting, dynamic delivery.
I'm being hosty. Sometimes I'm accused of being too hosty, but it's I feel refreshed, Joseph. I feel refreshed post Christmas holiday for us. Got a great 2 days to relax. We'll talk about that in a second. But I feel excited for a new week of Star Wars content.
Yeah, I think I might have relaxed for a full 2.5 days. It was amazing. And I am very excited to dive back into Star Wars land. There was, of course, some Star Wars land in my relaxing. But yeah, extra pump for what is coming.
Extra pump indeed. This is our news and cues episode, which means we got some news. It means we got some cues. But before we get to all that, we're going to remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later, as always, we'll do our 4center recommends, an audiobook we think you, yes, you, should try out on us. But as always, that is not all, Joseph.
No, we have another offer, Inside Editions. They are a publisher of a ton of great Star Wars books as well as other pop culture books, and they are offering 35% off across their website if you use this very special link, InsideEditions.com/discount/FC35. This week, we are continuing to recommend the Inside Editions book that is coming out in January. It is called Inner Jedi Journal. We are lucky to have some advanced copies. And wow, if you want to have a really balanced, thoughtful, compassionate new year, this journal has got some great prompts to make you feel like, yeah, I'm playing Star Wars. I'm pretending to be a Jedi by being nice to people and thinking about my feelings. So if you want to do that, you can check it out with this link, insideeditions.com/discount/FC35.
Man, I'm poking through the book right now. Week 31, great Luke Skywalker, no, Yoda quote about Luke. And then this whole thing about it's important to be mindful of your future, but equally critical to be focused on the present instead of long-term goals. What are some things that you can accomplish right now in the present? It can be as simple as asking a friend how they're doing or doing a chore that you've been putting off. I got to put that book away because it's going to make me a better person.
Right. I'm looking forward to cracking it open and trying my best to make Yoda proud of me.
That's all we want out of life.
I've wanted since I was a small child.
Yeah, get the book. Check it out with us. InsideEditions.com/discount/FC35, as Joseph said. Let's catch up. Star Wars Adventures, Life Adventures. We were out here celebrating Christmas for us. To those that celebrated, a belated happy holidays, Merry Christmas, happy Boxing Day, and all that stuff as we look towards the new year. Joseph, how was it? How did it go down? You said you got to relax. What happened?
It was great. My wife and I have both been very busy. So just really honestly, both being at home together and, you know, really taking a deep breath in having limited time on social media and just really being, you know, present. Hey, I made Yoda proud. I was present in the moment with my wife, which I'm sure that's what Yoda wants. Yes. Be present in the moment with your wife. So that was really, really great. We sometimes mention other pop culture adventures as well. I watched Matrix Resurrections heading into the holiday weekend. As always, we respect that people have lots of different opinions, and this is a divisive movie. Not everybody liked it. I loved it, and it started my weekend off in such a great, great way because it does have rhythms with Star Wars, with the sequel era, with just the reality of Star Wars, that it's been a generational tale, and there's that what you feel about the story, but then there's also like how you're affected. And for me, you know, Matrix is kind of tied to Star Wars because it came out, you know, in 99, right before Phantom Menace. And for my friend group, a part of the pushback to Phantom Menace was, it's silly, not cool and badass like Matrix. So Matrix is kind of attached to my Star Wars journey in some point, in some ways. So it was really fun to see a new film that wrestled with some of these kind of ideas of generational growth and change and all those kind of things. I don't want to say anything spoilery, but it's also it was fun to kind of have a Star Wars journey via a different pop culture franchise, because it just kind of made me remember a lot about 99.
Yeah.
And made me remember like, oh yeah, there was a moment in my life where I just really wanted to be both Neo and Kenobi at the same time. And my wife had happened to get me a black long sleeve shirt, 'cause she's trying to help me stay warm in the cold months. And like, you didn't know you were doing this, but you bought me a Neo shirt. I've been wearing it all weekend. So, yeah. So a little side journey into Matrix.
Yeah.
The Star Wars thing for me, Ken, is had a Star Wars Advent book this year. So a bunch of weird things there. Got some great Star Wars gifts. And my wife was so in tune with this part of the podcast.
Mm.
My wife said to me about seven times this weekend, like, ooh, that could be your Star Wars adventure on the podcast this week. Yeah.
Sarah's the best of us, isn't
she? She's really great. But the one I have to pick, my brother-in-law sent this as a gift, and his family sent this to my wife and I. They sent us the child Chia Pet edition.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And it's so great on so many levels. We haven't taken it out of the package yet, but the package has like three images of Grogu. You know, there's one there where he's looking kind of just cute and eager in his little hover pram there. There's the one where that shows the actual like growth of the chia of the flowers, which is not on him. It's in the rest of the pod. Right. So it kind of looks like he's being attacked by the Drenger from the High Republic.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And then the most mystifying thing, millions of pieces of art you could get of Grogu, right? Mm-hmm. For some reason, down in the corner, they have a picture of Grogu on this box with his ears kind of flat where he's sad. Why is he sad on the Chia box? I really want to talk to the graphic designer, the marketing people who said, yeah, put him on the box real sad in the corner.
Take away his space macaroons and put that on the box.
Exactly. That is a no cookies Grogu, and it's really, really funny.
That's so amazing. I'm looking forward to many good Chia Pet Grogu pictures from you on Instagram.
Oh, they're coming. They're coming because this is going to be a fascinating journey. Yeah, this is I'm going to cut myself off because there are just so many little moments of Star Wars joy. I could go on and on. I want to hear about your life in Star Wars adventures over the holiday.
Yeah, crazy week. Can't go too much into it, but I had a little of a health scare, you know, traveling and with the variants going around, it can be kind of tense. And so I had a couple of days where, spoiler, you did not catch COVID clean, several negative tests. But that was an adventure. So not a good adventure, but I got through it and figured out how to get tested and where to get tested and what long lines to wait in. You know, fortunate, very fortunate. Other folks, you know, Christmas plans canceled, holiday family plans canceled. And hey, we all got to be careful out there. Maybe we hunker down a little bit for a couple weeks here. I don't know, but that's just me. But after emerging from that and that tension, I was able to just, like you, completely relax, turn off my mind, relax and float downstream, as the Beatles would say, and actually finished, caught up with all of the Star Wars comics up to like last week, not counting High Republic. I still got to dive into those comics. I have a giant stack. But all the way up through issue one of the Crimson Reign comic coming out that's just started, that Life Day special comic. I read, I think it was 20 plus comics.
Oh, wow. So you're talking about like all the Star Wars mainline, Vader, War of the Bounty Hunter stuff?
War of the Bounty Hunter, finished all that. I had a big stack that got sent to me mid-December. And so finally had that. You know what? I'm not even going to play video games. You know, Grace and I were kind of just relaxing, doing our own thing. Went for. It's been cold. And is it Minnesota cold? I woke up today and went outside to work out. It was 38 degrees in my gym. I'll say that's cold. All right.
That's cold.
That's cold. So we didn't try to go for a Christmas morning walk, and Baxter, who now has his own puffer coat, his own puffer jacket, went about a block, stopped, wouldn't move. We had to cancel the walk. He was like, I'm done. Cold, my paws are wet. What are we doing here?
You got a little chihuahua as a weather person.
Yes. Yes. So, that forced me to sit down on the couch and read. And you know what? I've always had, the last few years of Marvel Star Wars comics and all the Star Wars comics, IDW, they're all good. I'm so happy they exist. I have ups and downs with them. They're not my favorite, but they're far from my least favorite. I enjoy all of them and enjoy a lot of the characters coming back and the use of, Rise of Skywalker characters and with classic trilogy characters. And of course the big return of Kira. I'm such a fan of that character. So it's all good. And it was all just happy to finish the War of the Bounty Hunters run. And we can dive into some other time. Like, I think they asked some big questions that they said, hey, let's really look at Empire and Jedi and what happened between there. And they asked some big questions. I don't know if I love all the answers, but I love that they got to ask them. And I love they got to explore them. And there were some really good moments in those. So that felt good. That felt good to catch up to as a Star Wars fan, to not feel I can now watch Alex Damon's videos again about the canon timeline update.
Excellent. I'm so looking forward to getting caught up. I'm a couple issues behind on High Republic, but I'm keeping up with that. But I'm pretty far behind on the mainline Vader and haven't touched any of the War of the Bounty Hunter stuff. So I'm really excited to dive in. And now knowing that you've read it all, it'll be fun to chat about either on the podcast or off.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And other than that, one of the things I did, I finally watched, you know, a lot of folks know I'm a big fan of rock docs. I love music documentaries, and finally caught up with like 20 Feet from Stardom on the flight back from D.C. Had a lot of fun on D.C. like I talked about last week. But then I finally caught up on Gaga 5'2". Love that. And then finally this week, I caught up on Edgar Wright's documentary about Sparks. The Sparks Brothers doc, the band that's been around since the 60s. It's still going strong. And it was a fascinating tale of artists true to themselves, artists who have failed to reach commercial heights, who have influenced a lot of other folks, but, you know, sometimes get surpassed by those folks. It's an interesting, creative journey to watch these brothers, Ronald and Ronnie and Russell, excuse me, Ronald and Russell. But I was, it made me think of, you know, watching the Gaga doc, and there is an artist so true to herself, an artist who was doing and saying more than she got credit early on, who has constantly been true to herself and challenged herself to move forward. And the Sparks brothers, the Sparks band, their music over 40 years has constantly moved forward. It's constantly to its own detriment, to their own successful, you know, their own success. They've hurt their own success chances by just constantly challenging themselves and artists and doing what they want to do. And it made me think of our guy, George. You talk about 1999. I reflected a lot on George going, I'm going to do more films the way I think they should be done and the story I want to tell, and I'm going to stick to that. And hey, you know, could a couple other people have said here, hey, you know, no instead of yes along the way? Yeah, I could have those discussions. Yeah, McCallum could chomp a little less gum and maybe did. You know, I get it. I get those conversations. But at the end of the day, and it's one of the things when you and I first met that you were talking about a lot too, of you can't take away from George the fact that the prequels were his art and what he wanted to do. And I ruminated, one of my favorite Star Wars words, really did ruminate on this idea of George the artist and how I think that spirit is very much alive in Star Wars, even though the corporate sheen is on it, because that's just the era we're in now. You can't change that. But Favreau and Filoni and Johnson and Deborah Chow coming in, we'll see what she does with Kenobi and Leslie Headlin in The Acolyte. We got some artists making Star Wars and doing it in a different era. But I hope Star Wars continues to keep that, have that artistic spark at its core. And I think it will. So there you go. Check out Sparks, the Sparks doc by Edgar Wright, and think about Star Wars.
Yeah, I got to add that to my list. And I'm a big Gaga fan, but I have not watched that documentary. So I would love to. Yeah, good stuff, right?
I cried three times during it. And it's just a very, you know, verite, fly in the wall. There's no narration. It's just kind of this constant days in the life and just to see what she goes through to put through. And again, how she was especially early on, she was able to play with the pop music world and the expectations and own her own image and who she is in the face of all of that, you know, stuff that I was missing back then. I wasn't paying super attention to it and I'm blown away by it and blown away by what she does. And I continue to be a fan. And I still, we talked about it before. I still love to see her in Star Wars.
I think she would be great in Star Wars in lots of different roles. We saw House of Gucci a couple of weeks ago, and that was great to see Gaga and Kylo Ren in all their big winter sweater glory. That was amazing. Yeah, I love what you're saying about this sense between people like Gaga. And I was interested in Gaga early on because there was something about like, oh, you are really doing exactly what you wanted to, which was like, oh, I think I'm watching like a Sinatra or a Prince or a David Bowie at the beginning of their career.
Yeah.
It's going to be fascinating to watch them go wherever they want to as they kind of reinvent themselves along the way. And there's a sense with Gaga, with George Lucas of that, I am making what I want. And sometimes it's unbelievably popular. It strikes a nerve.
Yeah,
but I'm going to stay connected to what I like. And even if it doesn't always land, I'm going to stay true to that. And that's the feeling that gives it such power.
It does. Yeah. The transition in a career to that Joanne album, which this doc focuses on a lot. And there's the first, you know, kind of singles hit. And there's a lot of what is this crap type of thing reaction because she wanted to change. And that I think a lot about, you know, Last Jedi did what it wanted to do. George doing what he wanted to do. And we're coming up on Book of Boba Fett as we record. We're a couple of days away. That's going to do what they want to do with it. And we got to follow that. We got to support that. And Matrix 4, by the way, Keanu Reeves, I meant to pull that quote. Keanu Reeves basically said, as Force Center says, engage with the story presented to you. Great quote of his out there of just like, engage with what the artist is telling you. See, go on that journey with them. I'm paraphrasing. And all that is about artistic, the idea of moving forward and telling your stories and being true to your art. I love it. I love it. So Force Center becomes Music Center again. What a lesson for that.
From Gaga to Neo, our Star Wars adventures is great.
But let's, from there, get into Star Wars news. During the holiday week, as one would expect, not a ton of Star Wars news, but we got some TV spots. We got a lot of Boba Fett stuff, and there's been a couple spots out there. We're going to focus mostly on the TV spot titled Throne, but there is the one up there out there called Arrival. So if Joseph, you want to mention that at any point, go ahead and toss that one in there as well. But Throne revealed a mysterious biker, and this got the world talking. And a Christmas Eve stocking stuffer, the minute-long trailer Throne revealed a little more of Boba Fett's goals. He says, quite frankly, I'm the crime lord now, very directly. We're going to talk about that. It also got the internet spinning with the reveal of Sophie Thatcher's role in the show. Now, light spoilers, if you just don't want to know anything, because we're so close, flying in blind might be the best thing. All right? You want to keep going? Thatcher, most known for her role in the Exorcist TV series and the show Yellowjackets, is playing a mysterious biker gang member, possibly named Drash, D-R-A-S-H. Thatcher's name had popped up in Lucasfilm casting rumors in late 2020 and beyond, tied to Mando Season 3, because that was before the Book of Boba Fett's existence was known to the world. He didn't know. Looking at the website Bespin Bulletin, shouting them out, they posted a casting description of the character that says that Drash is a cool, self-assured, a defier of authority, and in need of refinement. Also, they shouted this website to, I don't know who actually wrote this article on there. They were tracking Sophie Thatcher's like hair colors. She's maybe naturally blonde, dirty blonde. And they were like, look at this photo on her Instagram page. She's got the cut and the hairstyle. Then that's when Boba Fett started shooting. And then after it wrapped, look, she went back to her hairstyle. A lot of investigative reporting on her hair.
Wow.
And considering most actors just wear wigs on all these shows or fix their hair, it seems to have worked. So we'll start there on this thing. Also want to mention CW's The 100 actor Jordan Bolger is now rumored to be part of this biker gang. We've seen in several trailers so far. There was a freeze frame kind of shot on him, but not a lot of focus and nothing confirmed. All right, Joseph, that's a lot about 1 second of footage. So let's talk mysterious biker gangs. And as John Wesley Harding once sang, goth girls in space. What do you think?
Oh, man, I think there's a reason that this resonated. I think there's a couple reasons. One, I kind of love the beautiful absurdity and hubris that they are just milking everything they can out of what Robert Rodriguez has now told us is the first half of the first episode. And we're like, have we seen the entire first half of the first episode? No. But I think we've seen every angle of that that business meeting, right? So yeah. I think there is, they've been really successful. They're doing the job because everyone, even though it's reusing footage, it's doing a good job of sort of contextualizing the little theme that the short promos have with like Throne or, you know, Return or all the different ideas. Yeah. But because they've been sort of remixing a lot of similar footage, a lot of similar narrative into these different ideas, the fact that Drash here, if that is indeed her name, is such a pop of something new that's a big part of the impact of just like, right. It's not the Ithorian again. That said, I also think she would just pop in a huge, huge way if she had been in the first trailer. Right. That I think there is something for me. Here's kind of like my associations as soon as I saw her was she looks like she has been pulled from the pages of 70s, 80s, Star Wars comics, Star Wars comic strips. She looks like she could have been, some of the just humans, the random humans that you see a few of in the cantina or got cut from A New Hope. Right.
Yeah.
She's got that specific vibe that sometimes happens with Star Wars where it's like that not is like bizarre or alien as, you know, bounty hunters or the creatures or maybe even some of the main characters. It just looks like, hey, Star Wars is cool. Why don't we just throw Joan Jett in there? It's got that just like Star Wars is cool. It's got lightsabers and aliens. And now it has a punk rocker girl because that's also cool. And we also like that. And it's 1979.
That's We are truly music center today. That's amazing. Yes. Yes. And it totally works because Joan Jett is of that era. She might as well have been an Empire.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, she could have been one of the people calling Luke Wormy at Tosche Station. It would have been great.
That's wonderful. And our friend Brian Ward tweeted out a side-by-side with Sophie Thatcher's character here and Ally Sheedy from the Breakfast Club era, Ally Sheedy at the height of her powers back then. And that works too as well. You mentioned how, you know, this whole thing we talked about last week of Robert Rodriguez and the mystery of the marketing, and it's only, if, you know, he said first 7 minutes or whatever. And yeah, I feel as though now I can put together the business meeting and what's happening there, which is fine. And I'm glad. But I think I was not jaded because I'm so excited for the show. But this trailer dropped. I didn't watch it. And a friend of the show, Alden Diaz, actually texted me a screenshot of this character and was like, what do you think? And I was just like, what are you showing me? I thought it was from like my initial look, you know, probably a little groggy in the morning. I thought it was like a Marvel, like, does this character show up in Hawkeye? Like, what is this? And not to say that it's so modern, she's modern, and she doesn't stick with Star Wars. I think you're very right. It is reminiscent of that era and that time. I think you're right. It could be a Tosche Station regular. So I once I had to work through all that and kind of just be. I got swept up in the excitement too. It's 1 second of footage. We love to speculate responsibly, but we also love to just speculate irresponsibly. And it's just like, wow, who could this be? What's she going to be? And my, I want to kick this back to you, Joseph. Like, Sophie Thatcher's a known performer, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to get her for more than a minute. I don't know. Or an episode.
No, she could. Yeah.
If this is going to follow like the Mando formula.
Yeah, we have no idea, and that's great that we can speculate wildly, but I just don't think we have a lot to base it on, because it could be that, yeah, no, she's in that first episode because she plays a vital role in that gang. Or it could be like, yeah, no, Boba Fett needs lieutenants he can trust, and she's an orphan trying to make her way on Tatooine, and he's got a soft spot, and he makes her one of his lieutenants, and she's a main character. Like, it could be either.
Mm. Yeah. And so, yeah, you read that casting description, cool, self-assured, defier of authority, in need of refinement. That's also literally every commercial casting description of a one-line role, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that could be for, like, you know, a Clearasil commercial, you know?
Yeah, it totally is. And you're like, I'm a middle-aged dad at a soccer game. How am I refined? Need of refinement. I'm keeping an open mind to it, but you kind of mentioned it, but I have this question of, do we think, and maybe do we want, which is a dangerous thing to ask as a fan, do we want Boba's crew to grow along the way? We're set up for war. We're set up for confrontation. We've seen a lot of that. But yeah, what if Boba Fett does get some friends and adds to his little team here?
I think that makes a lot of sense, because it seems like it would put pressure on what his conflict appears to be of, like, not only do I want to not be bossed around anymore, I want to be the boss, but I think I can, you know, change this institution. Like, here's Boba Fett doing a PowerPoint presentation and going, here's the structure, flip it upside down, we're changing it all, you know? I think it would put pressure on him if he wants to remake this world so everybody works together with respect. The more people that he surrounds himself with, the more potential that those people are going to turn on him. Right. And he's promoting this to the whole larger crime world, in the galaxy, of, can we all work with respect and work together and not always have knives out? And then what's the tension where, like, inside my little inner circle, how many knives are coming for me?
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. I like the idea, too, of, you know, just based solely on this vague description of defier of authority but need and refinement. If Boba Fett can convince some folks that his way is the right way, then you have sides. Then you got a bigger conflict. And I'm interested in that. I don't necessarily imagine this character is going to be a young point of view character. I don't necessarily think Star Wars is always about generational change, but I don't think Boba Fett's going to take a helmet off and put it on her at the end of the season. So, how you are, Boba Fett. But it's just fun. And it's fun to have some rival gang. She's driving around in a blue Vespa, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I know people made the comparison to Kia Mall from the Droids animated series. She's got that vibe. I don't know. I'm going to guess that she's not Kia Mall. But it's just got a fascinating aesthetic, because that is this weird part of Star Wars that has happened of since the films were made in the late 70s, early 80s, the original trilogy, a little bit of our real life fashion and vibe got in there. Yeah. And now it's just canon. Like, I love that episode, Assassin of the Clone Wars, where they go to Alderaan. Like, everybody's just got mustache and sideburns. Yeah. Yeah. And they got that hair because the 70s is canon in Star Wars. So now when we see that real world vibe, it looks like Star Wars. And she's got that look, which is, you know, just so much fun and interest, and absolutely could be a one episode character.
Yeah.
Or I do think there's some power in her as a perspective character of us getting to learn what it's like being a young person trying to get by on crappy Tatooine in this era. You know, is she a symbol of, hey, I'm in this gang because I had no other options because things got even worse after Jabba was gone. And, you know, it's a symbol of what Boba Fett's trying to accomplish.
Yeah, I love that. I love that view as well. Yeah, we're going to analyze the underworld during this time. So I like that there. And now I can no longer see this clip and not hear "I Love Rock and Roll" kind of playing in the background.
She's got a bad reputation.
Yeah. Great stuff. You talked a little bit about it there. I liked this. It's almost a line. I don't know. It harkens back to some other kind of big popular pop culture lines or something like that. But I'm the crime lord now.
Hey. It does have I'm the captain now vibe.
Yeah. Yeah. A little bit of that. And, you know, like it's from Scarface or something too. But I like it. And it's no surprise that we've been going this way from the moment we first heard, you know, I am Boba Fett. I ain't no bounty hunter no more. Paraphrasing there, of course. I just love that he's got a new business card. It's just getting me excited.
Yeah. And I love that it is very clear of like, I am taking over Jabba's throne and it will be a nonprofit. No, he says crime.
Yeah.
He's the crime lord now. So this is an anti-hero story of, I think that really speaks to his perspective of like, look, spice is going to be traded. You know, there's going to be a black market for lots of things. Those things are, that's just the way the galaxy is.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be in charge of that. And it can be in a different way. The line that really thrilled me, the Drash shot was great, but the Boba Fett saying, why speak of conflict when cooperation can make us all rich?
Right.
That's something I was banging on about a couple episodes ago about that very, it is like Godfather movies. It is like The Wire of like, look, we don't have to change anything we're doing. We just have to stop shooting each other.
Right.
And we can actually be more quiet about this and more profitable. And it really challenges of like, what is this about? Who is in this crime game? For what motivation? Is this about your ego? Is this about proving that you're the best? Is it about annihilating everybody else? Or is it just about quietly turning a profit and living a nice life? What do you want? It opens up all these interesting vistas and even connects to kind of these big Star Wars ideas of symbiosis. And, you know, we are stronger together, and puts them all in the crime world, which is really fascinating.
Yeah. Can we, I love this idea of Boba Fett's like, look, we're going to sell some drugs. We're going to steal some things, a menace. And also if you've got a space kid that you need help with, I'm going to help because I got a code. And that's why
I got a code.
Love it. Well, there you go. That was, and then the arrival, I guess we should have mentioned the arrival trailer, has a lot more possible hints of, his first few moments. And actually I got to say, I watched that one and I didn't revisit it that one. Cause I just want to kind of experience that one. When it drops, you know, if he truly is rescued from the Sarlacc, we got some Tusken Raiders, all that kind of stuff. The back to tank shot we've seen before. But I pull back. And so it's weird. I think we all measure ourselves here on what we want to see or what we don't want to see going into a show.
Yeah, absolutely. There have been so many. I'm just watching this one real quick. Oh, yeah. Okay. This has got a couple more shots that do look like, okay, yeah, witness the rise. Oh, more walking with Gamorreans.
Yeah, a lot of shirtless Gamorreans.
Look, if you like shirtless Gamorreans, you are going to be in heaven with Book of Boba Fett.
They look like they're regional wrestlers from the 70s, those Gamorreans. I love it. I'm working the Tennessee territory. And we're almost here, Joseph. We're almost here.
So excited.
Yeah. In fact, at the time of this release, this is a morning release on Tuesday. I'm going to have to take a nap to stay up at midnight.
I'm looking forward to my nap.
Speaking of Boba Fett, I thought this story is interesting. Shout out to our friends at Star Wars News Net who had pointed out this article in the New York Times. I'm not currently subbed to New York Times. I'm out of my free articles, which I use to get information on COVID testing. So I'm not signed up for this, but support journalism. But Star Wars News Net pointed out this article of the Kasdans, Larry and John, during the process of writing Solo, were told no Boba. So I expected a lot more to that. I expected like a big, you know, John Kasdan, God bless him, does love to talk and tells tales out of school. And all, the only quote was John Kasdan saying Boba was off limits because he was in development elsewhere. That's all he said. But it did get me thinking about Boba Fett. It did get me thinking of the idea of Boba in Solo, a Star Wars story. I want to discuss that. But also the idea of, hey, look, I think it's great because they got told no then. And, you know, we know the movie is in development or something was in development with Simon Kinberg and Josh Trank, all that kind of stuff. But guess what? Because we got a no then, we got a big yes now. With this show. So what do you think about all this, Joseph?
I think it's fascinating. I think it's a good reminder of how long some of these ideas have been gestating, right? Mm-hmm. Like for a very long time, right? We're 6 years after Force Awakens, right? But even before that, Boba Fett and Kenobi were in development, right? And they've changed a ton. Solo was an idea that, according to some reports, was already in existence before the sale, right? So just a reminder that we have no idea how long ago this quote comes from, right? Was Boba off limits during the final draft of Solo or in the development phase years and years and years ago, you know?
Yeah, I love that there. Yeah, you're so right, because the Kasdans, particularly Larry, had this idea a while ago. So,
yeah.
But just on a surface level here, go with me. Could that have worked, Boba showing up in any capacity in Solo? Remember, we had the asteroid that was Slave One, according to all of us there, freeze framing. Could that have actually worked now that we've seen the movie and some time has passed on Solo?
I think in the existing movie, I think he would have got short shrift. I think it is much like the conversation of should Lando have been in The Last Jedi. Well, not if there wasn't something worthy of his presence, right? If he had just been at the casino we talk about with Lando, right? If Boba Fett had just been like in the background on Fort Ipso, like, okay, great. But I just don't feel like there's a ton of room for him. You know, if he had been mentioned instead of Bossk, fine. But even that, it seems like Boba Fett is kind of out of their price range.
Yeah.
For me, in my headcanon. So I think in the film that exists, it is. I'm glad that Boba isn't in it. Part of the reason that I think about how long ago is this quote from of like, was there a version of this movie that Boba Fett was in? Because it seems to me more like if you're going to include Boba Fett in that Solo story, he's a player, right? Like there's a version of that movie where it's not Enfys Nest in this great story of the beginning of the rebellion. Boba Fett's the other guy with the tip. And that's the beginning about the coaxium. And that's the beginning of this relationship. And it's a different story because it's not about Han Solo's early dalliance with what will become the full-fledged Rebel Alliance. It's much more about his entire plunge into this world. Maybe there's a way to tease out that Han and Boba become enemies, but they don't know that they have a lot in common. They're both, you know, from a certain point of view, they're both orphans. Han has a heart of gold. Boba has a secret code of honor, but they don't know that about one another. Maybe there was a kind of some emotional canon to be made of that. But I feel like for my money, if Boba Fett had been in Solo, he would have had to been one of the pillars like Enfys Nest.
Full agreement on that. And any time you discuss Star Wars, and I had this with a friend lately who texted me a lot of good what ifs with the Rise of Skywalker. Like, what if they had done this? What if that? And, you know, I always say, like, every one of them sounds good. Sounds good. They didn't do that, though. And with this idea, there's some what ifs about a Boba, you know, Fett versus Solo, like X versus Sever. Like this could be, you know, you could have done that. but I think you're right. And I think I just looking at Solo, you know, not perfect movie at any time on any level, but a very fun movie. One of my favorite movies to watch. And we love the world and we love the characters. I'm so happy with what we got and what it was saying and what that movie was saying. You said it about Infant's Nest, about Solo. So I think Boba would not have had a big enough place at the table. You're right. That Lando Last Jedi example is a great way to look at it. So I'm happy. I'm happy with what we got and what we're going to get.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's the thing for me is it can be really fun to go, this should have been in the movie. They should have done that. But just like, you know, a story is like building a house, right? You have the structural support pillars and then you have all of the kind of in design and interior decoration on top. And sometimes it sounds cool to say that there should be another pillar there, but that would mean that the house falls down. You know,
yeah,
you can't just make a change without really, really affecting the entire structure. And for me, my opinion on Solo, there are definitely a couple things with the way that some of the stories with the women characters are resolved. I sometimes go back and forth with. But other than that, that film knows exactly what it's doing. Every line, every beat, every pillar is exactly in the place to tell the story it wants to tell. So I think that's part of the reason I react to it of like, yeah. It would be a different structure if Boba Fett was in it.
It really would. It really would. Final thought, final question back at you here. Do we ever want to see their feud officially begin in modern canon, comic, book, TV series? Do you want to see it flashback in Book of Boba Fett episode 3? Let me tell you the tale of Han Solo. Do you want that?
I would love to see that. I would absolutely love to see that. I think a part of the reason for my strong opinion about Solo 2, about Boba Fett being in the film Solo, is I kind of like the idea that Solo meets Boba Fett once he's a little bit more got his foot in the door. Yep. And he's one of Jabba's guys, you know, that he's proven himself, right? And so he's a little bit more up to the task of going toe-to-toe with Boba Fett. So, I think we're in this era where some things you can stay attached to, like, but I always wanted to be that to be a mystery. And there's always going to be things in Star Wars that are mysteries. But, you know, we're having fun, you know, playing in the playground that George Lucas created. And this is one of those things that I wouldn't mind seeing at all on screen because that relationship's really interesting to me. The fact that Boba Fett is clearly, you know, the errors of his death, his bumbling into the Sarlacc at the hands of Han Solo aside, Boba Fett is a badass. And I think most of the galaxy sees Han as a lucky screw up, right? So yeah. I think if Han gets to drop on Boba Fett, it's got to piss him off so much. And that's just an interesting story of egos to me.
I'm not saying this is a great pitch, but like if you're going to do a Solo 2, you're going to make Solo 2 happen. Them competing on the same job, you know, for Jabba is a place that I, you know, outside of the Kira and Maul stuff, we'd love to see more of, all that kind of stuff. Like I could be interested in seeing that. Because what you're saying, number one, get Solo more established himself. I think you're right. If he meets him too soon, Boba Fett probably tosses him aside with ease. So I love that. Boba Fett fighting for his place, this upstart, this lucky loser upstart finding his way up. But also, you're right. Of all the things that all the mysteries out there, everything like Boba Fett, Solo, Return of the Jedi, Empire Strikes Back. I've always grown up with the thought that there's a little bit more than just even there. Right. That's why.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's why I've always been a fan of knocking Boba Fett into the Sarlacc, because that's my Han. Don't you hurt my Han. And you've been going at him for a while. So to pay respects to that and actually get the story, I think you could do it in a good way, but not on me. The pressure would not be on me.
The pressure is not on us for that one, but I would be thrilled to see it.
There you go. We're almost done with the news. I want to toss this one in here, Joseph, on the fly. Congratulations to Katie Sackhoff. Bo-Katan revealed on Christmas Eve that she is now a mom. That's right. Oh. She's kind of under the radar, kind of just went out and did that. And, of course, she got married to Robin Gadsby back in October, she announced. But they welcomed a baby girl, Jenerva Grace Gadsby, earlier this month. So she revealed it this past week. So congratulations to Star Wars and Battlestar Galactica and Longmire's Katie Sackhoff.
That is great.
From there, we're going to take a quick break. But before we do, we want to recommend an audiobook for you. Joseph, what do we have today?
We are barreling toward the next big book in the High Republic series, so we are recommending the second book in the series, The Rising Storm by Kevin Scott.
That's right. Download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and after that, we're going to answer your questions here on ForceCenter.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome back to ForceCenter, the big show, the main show, the superstar destroyer of our fleet. We have got some questions coming our way. Joseph, what do we have?
Yeah, we got two questions from Twitter and two from our patrons on Patreon. As always, four there are. Not two, but four total. We are going first to Twitter, and this question comes from Thavius, which is a great Star Wars name, and perhaps, I don't know, a lord in Lord of the Rings?
Yeah. That's about right, yeah.
So Thavius says, how did Yoda know about the rule of two if the Sith had been extinct for a millennia? Mm. Getting great excitement to go back into the epic Phantom Menace debates.
Yeah.
So, Ken, where do you go with this? Did that always stick in your head as a question coming out of the Phantom Menace?
I honestly didn't, not to cut this question off there at the pass. That kind of stuff never sticks with me too much, but I love asking about it. I love thinking about it, Thavius. The easy answer is, you know, some book somewhere, maybe on Octo, there's some record keeping of the Sith. Maybe there's a Sith expert. Maybe there's a wing of Sith studies in the Jedi Order because they need to. So it could be that, maybe some kind of an enlightenment that finds its way to Yoda from that. That's kind of where I go with it. Simple that. He just kind of studied it.
Yeah, nice. I think that's good. This is fun because this is one of those Star Wars questions that I haven't thought about a lot in recent times. But, oh, wow, in the sad years before we had a podcast. I thought about this one in 1999 because Moore came out about the rule of two, of like, that's how they survived. It was a secret. And like, hey, wait a minute. How do Yoda know the secret? And why is he just blatantly disagreeing with Ki-Adi Mundi? Like, come on, what's going on? So it's a fun one to revisit. For me, I go to kind of a similar place with you of just the headcanon that Yoda throughout the prequels and definitely in the Clone Wars animated series, he's always the one who's like, some of the Jedi have gotten into kind of lockstep and groupthink and they're overconfident and oversure. Ki-Adi Mundi is always overconfident.
Yeah.
Almost every one of his lines is overconfident. Mace is gets to be a little blinded by hubris as well. And Yoda's always the one who's like, maybe let's meditate, you know?
Yeah.
So I like the headcanon that Yoda has heard whispers in his travels over the years that he has maybe had some sort of visions, and that maybe there's something that he's picked up, that there's this possibility that they're still out there via this rule of two. And it contradicts the really popular belief. So Yoda just kind of, you know, keeps it mostly to himself. Maybe he talks to Mace about it from time to time of like, is this fear? Is this paranoia? Could they have survived this way? It seems like it's a big change from their dogma, but it seems like a way that they could be secretly surviving, or am I just being paranoid? I don't know. But then when their return is confirmed, when they reveal themselves to the Jedi, Yoda's like, yep, not only are they back, but they've been here. That rumor I heard, that vision I had, it's true. That's got to be how they survived. It's a rule of two.
Yeah. Yeah. There for that. Really am. And the idea too, that, you know, if you got to, you know, the Sith, if they've been functioning under this kind of rule of two banner for a while, biding their time for millennia, did one of them talk at some point? Did someone know something? So rumors out and about the galaxy. What's Yoda doing during the High Republic? Is he just on, sabbaticals and teaching kids on field trips, or is he out gathering information because it's something that they feel they should know? I don't know. And is it a comment on certain, some Jedis or some parts of the Order being complacent, thinking the Sith are truly extinct, or is it worth kind of investigating whether they're still there? So I could see there's a lot of downtime in Yoda's life where maybe he was studying this.
Exactly. And always with these kind of questions, like I tried to do some Googling. I read the whole entire Wikipedia entry on the Ruler 2. I realized there might be some quotes from Lucas or some EU canon answer to that out there.
Right.
So if that exists, I have the utmost respect for that. I couldn't find it on a quick Wikipedia search. So those are our head canon thoughts. Anything else on this one before we move on?
No, just always trust Yoda. Trust Yoda.
Trust Yoda. He's right. Yeah. Look, yeah. If you're in an alley and Yoda's like, go this way, and Ki-Adi Mundi's like, go this way, I'm going with Yoda.
Yeah.
Moving on then to our next question from Kevin Ross. Kevin says, you find yourself on Coruscant when the celebration of the death of the Emperor is announced. How do you celebrate the news? How do you start spreading the news on Coruscant? How do you celebrate the demise of the Emperor, Ken?
Look, I celebrate most things with food. So I think I'm going to get a nice meal. I would respect and support the people ripping down Palpatine's statue there, as we see, ringing some bells and dancing. I'm all for that. I'm a little more subtle, a little more stoic in life. So my love language is, hey, I brought a cheesecake. So I think that's where I'd go. I'd go to a diner, maybe that diner, and celebrate with friends. Sit around, get some space chips and salsa, have a party.
Yeah. I would definitely want to celebrate. I would want to be careful about getting caught up in the crowd. Like, look, the toppling of the statue, for me, that's that kind of has to happen. That is a symbol. Tossing the whole stormtrooper around, I don't know if I need to be a part of that.
Right.
As you see in that clip of celebration. I know what I would do this. I would probably try to wait until the crowds had thinned a little bit. And I would probably try to take a selfie with the fallen statue.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair.
Just, and then, because I take a lot of selfies, like maybe I'll share this. And then I'm like, no, No, I won't. I'm not going to do that. But it's a record of being in this historic moment.
Yeah.
And then I think my instinct is I would really want to discuss it with people. So, yeah, I would want to go to Dex's Diner, get some big juicy Ronto wraps, some Jawa juice, and quietly talk about what does this mean? What do we think is going to happen next? All that kind of stuff, just the actual fallout.
Oh, I love that. And maybe get on a podcast, discuss it all.
That's what I was thinking, too, of like the explosion of podcast content. We're like, these are no longer edited by imperial censors. We can say whatever we want. That's so great.
Yeah, love that. Love that.
Chris. I always knew he was old. I didn't believe that that hollow illusion.
Exactly. Yeah. I had an uncle who he knew a Jedi. He said they were pretty good. I didn't believe them.
It wasn't that long ago. That's how much they can control us with fear. We weren't allowed to speak about them. Yeah.
Right.
I saw this little green guy just tear things up with a lightsaber. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. any other thoughts on celebrating on Coruscant?
I mean, it's a good thing to celebrate. So let's keep celebrating that one.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so we move on to our patrons from Patreon. This comes from Tommy Terry Green. Tommy says, which canon book would you most like to see adapted into live action, and who would you cast and hire behind the camera? Not necessarily your favorite book, as you may not think your favorite suits the medium of film as well as another. Thanks. This is a great one. Ken, before we get into your pick and your casting, how are you feeling about this in general? We've talked a lot about interpreting books and comic arcs as animated movies or series. Yeah. How do you feel about a book being turned into live action?
It's still something I would like to see, only because I think there's so many great book stories that, you know, it's just the nature of it. Not as many people are going to read the books as watch the shows or the movies. I get that. So there's sometimes I just want to like, all right, hey, fine. If you're not going to read Lost Stars, I'd love for you to see it. And I think that's the driving factor for me on that. I think I'm more 6 years ago when a lot of these books were out, I was more like, yeah. Now the nature of adaptations and what's left, you know, what's left on the cutting room floor, so to speak, and how you change mm-hmm. stories. I think it would be not frustrating, but it'd take the focus off the stories. If you had a bunch of folks going, well, you've been in the book, which I get and respect, trust me. But like, I'm happy for new stories, maybe based around eras related to some of these books.
Yeah, no, I'm in the same places. I would love to see some of these things on the screen animated for sure, but mostly from the perspective of get them to more people because they're such vital and interesting stories. And I think animated for me sidesteps a lot of the casting stuff of like, well, would you get that actor back, or that actor, you know, is not with us or is not participating right now? So how do you do that? We have some of the cast, but not all the cast, or the age things. And the animated kind of sidesteps that. So I think that's why I think about it. So the question about live action was really interesting and really challenging. So what is your answer, Ken? Where do you go?
I went through, you run through the books and what I feel works the best. And then, you know, as I said before, with like fantasy actor casting, even the fantasy director hirings, sometimes I fail on. But so I just went to what's something recently that I've liked, that I was moved by, that I felt fully engaged with the story and could work. And I went with the book Leia, Princess of Alderaan. Mm. I'm pitching a limited series here on Disney Plus, and I'd love it to be kind of led, directed by Kate Shortland, who just did the Black Widow film.
Ooh, yeah.
I really love she did that. That ended up being one of my favorite films in the MCU because it was a little smaller, more intimate, more character-driven. Not that the other ones don't have those moments, but it was very thoughtful. It was very direct, at times not subtle in what it was trying to do and say. And I felt myself really pulled in by everything in that movie. And I think she could handle a young Leia during this point of her life and take the book and put it out to 6 or 8 episodes and just kind of tell those stories, tell her, you know, the relationship with, what's his name? Keir Damati. It's been a while. Young Holdo, you know, a little more Luna Lovegood Holdo, as we call this. And then her relationship with her mother and her parents. All that stuff was kind of on display in Black Widow for me. So I'd love to see her handle that with Leia, Princess of Alderaan.
Yeah, it is such a great formative adventure for Leia. It is such a great insight into the nature of rebellion and how desperately her parents want to keep her safe and how desperately they're trying to stop the rebellion from having to be a war, right?
Yeah.
Trying everything they can to make the galaxy a better, safer place without it tipping over into we have to have conflict. But one of the biggest things for me is just Brea, right? Just having a ton of quality time with Brea. So to see that in live action would be amazing.
Absolutely amazing. Can you imagine that that dinner scene with Tarkin? Just the tension.
Oh, God, so it could be so well done. Yeah. And there, well, I was going to say another thing, but if people haven't read it.
Yeah, I know. I'm even, yeah.
Yeah, I fall into thinking like, well, yeah, people listen to these podcasts. They would like, but plenty of people haven't read it. If you haven't read Leia, Prince of Alderaan, is one of the very best, I think.
It's on my fantasy reread list. Like I'll ever have time to do that.
Well, maybe we'll have to do that. We'll just put the books we want to reread in like, a little lottery and we'll pull one out.
There you go.
And that'll be the one that we make time to reread. I went with a very different novel. Ken and I both like this novel. We've both talked about it from the perspective of it is such a different Star Wars novel. But that's part of what made me feel like this. I don't know if it's the greatest idea ever to make it as a live action film or as a Disney Plus series, but it feels doable and exciting. And that is the book Phasma.
Yeah.
This is basically for those of you who haven't read it, this isn't spoilers because this is how the book begins, which I guess is a spoiler. So tune out if you don't want to know. A resistance spy, Vi Moradi, has collected what she believes to be the story of Phasma and is trying to tell that story to her advantage to get out of some trouble with the First Order. So it's got some really interesting dynamics about the way the First Order works, about the way the Resistance works. The character of Vi Moradi herself is amazing. And if this is successful, then you could do a film of Black Spire,
yeah.
The follow-up book. But it also just dives into like who Phasma is and her perspective. And I think it's one of those stories that I think Phasma works just fine in the movies as one of the bad guys. There's not room for everybody. Yeah. But this book makes everything that's in the movies richer.
Really does. Really does. And I had such a journey with that book, right? Where it was like halfway through, I was like, this might be the first Star Wars book I don't finish. And suddenly I was like, this might be my favorite Star Wars book in a while. Like it was really good. And yeah, you put Gwendolyn and Christie at the head of that. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. But anyways, I'm stepping on all your answers.
This was kind of a cheat for like, who would I cast? Mm. Well, maybe this incredibly talented, popular actor that made Phasma such a popular character.
Yeah.
Maybe Gwendolyn Christie. Plenty of time with the helmet off. Spoilers for the book there. Mm. But yeah, Gwendolyn Christie. And then you got Vi Moradi. The other character thought about casting. There's an actor named Vanessa Morgan who is on Riverdale as well. Riverdale is really my source for knowing age-appropriate actors for young things, so it comes up a lot.
That's fair.
But Vanessa Morgan seems like she's got that right edge of just that intelligence that Vi Moradi has to pull things off. And then for director, I would go with Rachel Tulele. Rachel Tulele, people might know of way back when, directed Tank Girl. And then in more recent years, she's been doing a bunch of great genre television shows. She did a bunch of really important, seminal, emotional episodes of Doctor Who. She's done episodes of Riverdale. So she has worked with Vanessa Morgan, but she's done a bunch of the CW superhero shows as well. She's just a director who really, I think, she has directed a lot of things where characters just go through hell, but directed them with heart and with reverence for pop culture. So I think she'd be a great pick for telling Phasma's story.
That's a great one. And it's so different. It could be so unique with the character that, people know and many people have affinity for. But the Mad Max, Star Wars Mad Max kind of, Fury Road. I remember we talked about that a lot at the time. It kind of has feel. It feels like that. It would look visually different.
Yeah, no, I think it would be for people who are like, I want some new energy in Star Wars, even though it is, you know, a known character in Phasma. That'd be some different energy on the big screen, which would be really cool.
It would.
All right, we're going to move on to our final question. This one comes to us from Will Culbertson. Here's what Will has to say. So I have a confession to make. In addition to being a lifelong Star Wars fan, I am also a lifelong Star Trek fan. In particular, I know, shocking.
Cheat.
Yeah. In particular, Will says, I have really been enjoying the new content being developed for the franchise over on Paramount Plus that started with Star Trek Discovery back in 2017 and has expanded into several live action and animated series, much in the same way that Star Wars has. One particular aspect that I find myself really appreciating is that there is an official 25-minute after show for each different series called The Ready Room, where they talk to the various artists about character, design, and story choices, and usually ends with a sneak peek at next week's episode. I know that many popular shows have this type of after show content, but what makes this one stand out is that it is hosted by Will Wheaton, who is, of course, a member of the Star Trek family himself. Having someone who is so closely linked to the franchise as the host really seems to put the artists at ease, and the conversations they have are always enjoyable and insightful. So my question for you is this. Do you think that having this sort of consistent and official after show would be a benefit to the Star Wars fan community? And who from the Star Wars family would you like to see be the host of the show? This is a really great, thoughtful question and confession. I am with you in this confession. I am also a big fan of Star Trek and have been for a very long time as well, watching the original series reruns with my dad when I was very, very young. So, Ken, where do you go with this? How do you feel about a Star Wars after show?
I only get a little bit of post-traumatic shivers from just being so in that world, right? In 2014, 2015, wherever, after shows and great, you know, a lot of podcast networks sprung up. But by the way, we're still doing it. Check out the Book of Boba Fett report coming this week. So I think it's great. And the official ones, I haven't seen this one. And Will is a great cat. So I'm sure it's great. I didn't watch, wasn't a Walking Dead fan. I didn't watch that one. But like they tried HBO to Game of Thrones one. And it's kind of a weird bag. It's a mixed bag for me. So this doesn't move the needle on the surface. But I thought more about Will's question and what he's saying about it. It's official, but you got someone there and talking about it. So here's what I got, Joseph. Hear me out.
Yeah.
They got so many great hosts. You know, Anthony Carboni, Andy Gutierrez, Christiane Ariel's doing a great job. Kristen Baver holding down the news sub. Peter Townley back in the day, but we want someone from the family. So I'm going to say who's like warm, loving, has a lot of respect, loves Star Wars, loves being back in Star Wars. And has a lot of insight. Ahmed Best. All right.
Ooh,
put him in one chair. But then I also think it's valuable to have the show led by someone who's not, you know, inside in the sense of they've been in a film, TV show or a writer's room about it. You want them connected to the Star Wars fandom. And this person has been a writer for StarWars.com. And I can't think of anyone who brings more joy to Star Wars than Jennifer Landa. I want Jennifer Landa and Ahmed Best to host the official Star Wars after Star Wars show.
I think that is a great pitch. Yeah, that is wonderful. That is perfect, I think.
Yeah. And you could start this week. Get it going, cuz you know, Jennifer's looking forward to Book of Boba Fett too, so.
Yeah, for host, one of the only I thought of all the great hosts that Lucasfilm has had for their fan shows over the last couple of years that you mentioned, Anthony Carboni, Andy Gutierrez, Kristen Baver, Kristen Ariel. But that question of who is kind of inside from the working on the stories, as opposed to the coverage. Bobby Moynihan was one of the people that jumped out at me. I think if you wanted to just kind of have a fun, bouncy conversation, I don't know if, you know, Bobby Moynihan is obviously extremely skilled, has many talents. I don't know if he's like, and I've also wanted to be an entertainment journalist, you know, I don't know if that is something that has been in his dream board. So yeah. There's that. I think a part of what is so great about Will Culbertson's question is pointing out Will Wheaton. And full disclosure, Will is a friend of mine in real life. Met him on the Jonathan Colton cruises performing there many years ago. But I think
a part of the reason that Will does such a great job is because, as Will Culbertson points out, Will Wheaton, he knows acting, he knows Star Trek, but he also knows hosting. He knows this world of talking about pop culture. Mm-hmm. But I think the really big thing is he is a fan. Right. You know, and if he had never been cast in Next Generation, he would have watched it.
Right.
He's got great, if you follow him on social media, he's got great posts about, like, I've never been in Deep Space Nine, but boy, do I love that one. Here's my thoughts on it. You know, there are all sorts of different kinds of actors who can be in these things we love. They can be the actor who's just like, all your space words, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't care. I find the truth of the character and I come and play it. And that's great. And then they're the people who are fans of, like, if I wasn't in this, you know, I would also be talking about neutrino pulses.
Yeah.
And I think Will having that perspective of knowing the truth of making a story like this, but also being a fan of it, is such a great, great person to bridge that gap. And for that reason, Ken, I really support both your choices. I'm Ahmed Best has that. And Jennifer has that because she's been an actor. Yeah. There's a while there you couldn't watch television without seeing Jennifer buy a car. Jennifer is an accomplished actor as well as a entertainment journalist and pundit. So I think those are both really great choices.
Yeah, we'll make it happen. We'll make it happen. Who do we know?
Make it happen.
Not anyone anymore.
Yeah. Probably. So I think I get real excited about it. I love the host thought, but I also just do want to share that I think I do have, as a fan myself, I think I do have reservations about an after show.
Yeah. Yeah. I do too. Yeah.
Cause they can be really great. I am a Walking Dead fan. So I've occasionally watched the Walking Dead one, which kind of, to me, is like that's the ground zero of the, the company itself producing an after show about the show, which is different to me than fans doing reviews.
Yep.
Because that's, you know, that's the audience having a relationship with it versus the creators telling you things about it. So I think for me, the thing that I'm really coming to is, I think I'd be really excited about a Star Wars after show if we talked to actors, stunt people, costumers, directors of photography, editors, if we really talked about the experience of making it, the technical side, those people's personal relationship with Star Wars, I would love all those things. I think I'm at myself at a place where I don't want writers and directors to come out immediately after something has debuted and just tell us what it means.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important for our relationship with art to have, as David Lynch calls it, room to dream, room to use our intuition and say, hey, I watched this and it wasn't explicit why this character did this, but I really felt like it was because of this. And I'm going to sit with that. And that gives us time to think and to reflect. It connects us more deeply to the piece of art or the storytelling, because we're building our own relationship with it. I think it is good for the fan community, because when we can have healthy conversations, then it can be a real back and forth of like, well, in that moment, I really think that Boba Fett was furious. And I'm like, well, wow. But for me, I thought Boba Fett was at a place of great peace. Mm-hmm. And then you get to talk about, why did you see it that way? You know, and did I miss a clue in the show? Or is it that I have a different life experience than the person I'm talking to? All of those really rich conversations to me become in danger when one of the creators just goes, no, this is exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And like my wife and I ended up laughing a lot during our Game of Thrones rewatch as we built up to that last season before it premiered. And when you watched them on whatever version of HBO that was, then they would have these like little 3-minute behind the scenes tags.
Yeah.
And it would often be Benioff and Weiss ripping the subtext away and just going, when Tyrion did that thing, it was because of this. And sometimes it would be like, yeah, and I know, I just watched the episode.
Yeah.
Right. That's not an insight. And other times it would be like, I wanted room for that to be ambiguous. I know not everyone agrees with me. I totally own this as my own opinion, but it's just something I just feel like some of the instances where writers and directors in recent times have just come out and said, this is this, period. Mm. Then for years, the conversation isn't about the story between fans. The conversation is about interviews. I want to talk about the stories. It's interesting, the interviews, but I don't want to have our you know, discussions being about our interpretation of dueling interviews, about the actual stories.
I really understand that, especially in the last couple of years, and we've been in this world neck deep, you know, this pundit world for a while now. And I do sometimes enjoy hearing some of it from the creators, I'll say, only, but I got to be honest, only sometimes to settle a debate. Where I'll be like, oh, but you see the thing Tyrion did? This is why. And your theory's wrong. And I'm not saying that's the right thing for me to do, right? I'm not saying that's right.
Yeah.
And then, so to go into, like, even the Mando, the making of Mando, especially the first season Mando one, I thought even in describing a lot of it, it was open, right? You know, it was a little different form.
Absolutely.
That wasn't an after show per se, but it was a little open. So I get what you're saying, especially if, let's just say, like, hey, Last Jedi, Rian Johnson, who kept some mystery back, he said, you know, right, it's personal, and he doesn't go into, you know, when I was seven, this happened. But it's there. But you're right, that even when he comes out and says, oh, well, this is what it's here, you're still going to have a group of people going, well, he's an idiot. There, you prove it. And then it does become, I think it inflames stuff up even more. I'm not saying I need Rian to shut up. I'm just saying I get that. It creates drama where maybe we don't need it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing for me is I love Last Jedi. I love Rise of Skywalker. The creators have every right to say whatever they wanted to. But, you know, Rian Johnson, you know, was explicit on some things. Chris Terrio came out and was explicit in interviews immediately after Rise of Skywalker. It doesn't change the minds of people who don't like it.
Right.
You know, so it doesn't have that impact practically. And I think this is just something I've been thinking about a lot. I am a big fan of David Lynch, and David Lynch, there's some great, funny supercuts of him refusing to answer things if you just want to have some fun on YouTube.
Yeah.
But his philosophy really comes from that perspective, at least for his films, that are like, my films are trying to communicate something I can't say in words. If I could say it in words, I would just write it down in a book and tell you. I make these because storytelling and film are this kind of magic that can express something that can't be said in words. Mm-hmm. And I don't think all Star Wars or pop culture is sort of dreamlike and auteurish as that. But I still just think that there is this beauty in intuiting or discussing answers for ourselves. And I think the Mando behind the scenes stuff is great examples of that, because we talk about, you know, the volume. We talk about sort of the like Favreau and Filoni will talk about kind of like a vibe they wanted or the influence or why they were passionate. And that stuff's all great. You get these insights, but they don't stop and go, here's exactly why Din wouldn't stay with Omera. I'm telling you the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, they're leaving that room for the fan to create their own relationship with the story.
No, and look at it. What we do here in Force Center, what has just kind of emerged over years of doing this, but it's been pretty present from the beginning when you know, you brought your expertise on just the, you know, themes and how to analyze themes. That was not how I looked at a lot of this stuff, because I kind of came of punditry age, so to speak, doing shows where an after show meant you sat down and you went through every scene you just saw and described the scene and what you felt, did you like it or no? And you know, and by the way, Will, this is a great question. You're giving us a lot of thoughts. And Star Wars, I would be bored out of my mind. And I've been on those shows. You can see my face. I'm bored out of my mind of just like, yeah, we just saw it. And what does it mean? And what, let's talk about it. And I think you and I break it down. We attach it to we'd like to always put the caveat that these are opinions, deeply researched opinions at times. But I think at the end of the day, it's just what you and I feel, how it connects to our lives and the fandom in general and the story overall. And that's what's fun. So if Star Wars officially could have that, I would definitely be interested. If Ahmed and Jennifer could lead us in that kind of discussion, that's what I'd want.
Yes, absolutely. And thank you, Will Culbertson, for the great question. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to kind of work through some of those thoughts. I think I have that. I wanted to express that I'm really excited about the concept of aftershows with that asterisk of there's this fine line of leaving that relationship for the viewers to make with the story. And I think there's so much great insight and great storytelling to be had in an after show and great sharing. So I'm all there for the after shows hosted by Jennifer and Ahmed.
Shout out to Rebels Recon show they did with Andy Gutierrez up at the Lucasfilm offices, which was a different. It was almost like a little weekly behind the scenes versus an after show. But they got a lot of that creator insight that you're talking about of a little more of the process, a little more open-ended. We'll go into some of the themes, but it was fun. It was a real good tag. So maybe something like that could come back one day.
Yeah, as always, can you do a good job of shortening my thoughts? I would love an after show that is about process and is still open-ended.
Well, look, I don't do a good job of shortening my own thoughts, so happy to help you.
We got to shorten each other's thoughts. That's what we do here on Force Center. Welcome to Thought Shorteners. That is it for the questions. All great ones.
Big ones. Great ones this week. Yeah, absolutely. All right. We are almost out of here. This is the end of the show. And we really appreciate y'all listening to the end. Like I said, last time out, this is where I would highlight the DC comedy gigs. And everyone who came out to see me at DC as a Force Center listener heard them at the end of the show. We appreciate clicking all the way through. I'm going to tell you where to find us here. We're on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We are on Instagram and YouTube as well, where now we are rebroadcasting audio versions of every episode, thanks to Acast. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We are available on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more. And that is true. And more, working on that as we get into the new year to make sure we're on places like SoundCloud and other spots. Stay tuned for that. Merch is available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. You can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. From there, you can get into our Discord, where this week our character of the week is Boba Fett. And a lot of our Force Center friends are discussing that. And also, we want to shout out, we have currently a show going on right now on the Companion app. Information is available on our Discord and Patreon page for supporters. It is an exclusive show for the Companion. It's been a lot of fun putting that together. In fact, Tommy Terry Green, who asked that question, one of the producers over there, we love the work they're doing with us to get that show out to their listeners. Check that out. We'll tweet out that show and has the links that you need to know. You can follow me at Kednapsock. Go to my website, kednapsock.com, for more information. We always like to shout out charities or things we want to just kind of highlight in the real world. I was thinking about this one because a lot of the conversations around Star Wars Eclipse and everything, we want to make sure we shout out the fine folks at the Trevor Project. Go to thetrevorproject.org. Trevor Project is the world's largest suicide prevention and crisis intervention organization for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, or questioning young people. They got resources, counselors. They got tips for those trying to help, trying to support, trying to be allies. And also, you can donate and support as well. For more information, go to thetrevorproject.org. Joseph.
Yeah, you can find me at Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw. And then for all my other comedy adventures, you can find me on my website at josephscrimshaw.com.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Joseph and I have been battling the rain throats. Southern California. Rain is recorded in an actual cold. Jokes, take your jokes and toss them aside. It's actually cold Southern California.
Yeah, sometimes I go like, why is my throat a little raspy? Let me ask this space heater that is on 24/7 next to me.
Oh, I got Grace a space heater for Christmas, and we now have seven in the house. So hey, there you are, folks. That is it for this week. A Book of Boba Fett coming, deep dives, big week here in Force Center. Thanks for sticking around. We'll see you next time. This was Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.